Good morning and welcome to another edition of Pulse of the Region, brought to you by the Metro Hartford Alliance. The Alliance is an investor-based economic development partnership focused on business development and growth, retaining and attracting jobs and talent, ensuring a strong urban core with our Hartford Chamber of Commerce, and promoting the Hartford region and all of its assets. I am your host, Brian Boyer, Chief Marketing Officer at the Alliance. You can learn more and, of course, invest today at metrohartford.com. And I also want to point people to our pandemic-related website, preparedhartford.com, for all updates on the pandemic, from the economic side of things to the health side of things. It's all at preparedhartford.com. And I also want to thank Oak Hill, Empowering with Disabilities, as our show sponsor. Oak Hill sets the standard, partnering with people with disabilities to provide services and solutions, promoting independence, education, health, and dignity. You can learn more at oakhillct.org. And we're in crazy times here, unprecedented times, and a lot of discussion about the economic impacts and the health impacts on people. And there's a lot of things that we just don't know. And so today, to educate us on some of those things, we are talking with Eric Galvin, who is the president of ConnectiCare. And Eric, I want to thank you for being with us on Pulse of the Region amongst all the madness here.
Paul, good morning, Brian. Happy to be with you, and hope everybody in your home is well and stays that way throughout this crisis.
You as well, Eric, including your entire employee base and everything. So let's get into it. And as far as ConnectiCare goes, I mean, you're always on the front lines, but I feel like even more so these days. Talk a little bit about, if you could, maybe about a month ago, maybe 5 weeks ago, we were sort of living in a somewhat normal world, and then everything was kind of turned upside down. So as things have kind of progressed here, what's been the response of ConnectiCare? How has your job changed and the role of ConnectiCare?
Well, so it's certainly interesting times. We do a lot as an organization to plan for all types of different challenges, whether they be, weather-related, whether they be other disasters that we have to deal with. Clearly, I think this is beyond the scope of a lot of those preparations. That said, I've actually been very impressed not only with our team, but just frankly the partnership more broadly, as how we've come together as a group of communities to make sure that we are there for the people that we serve, the communities that we live in and work in. But then also the people on the front lines. So the company specifically, there are many dozens of things that we've done. I think the most important, though, are maybe three or four. First, there are a number of more administrative and financial things that we've put into place to try to help our customers, as well as hospitals and doctors. Things like a 60-day grace period for premium payments, or taking away a number of administrative touch points that we typically have with doctors and hospitals as we try to maximize the efficacy of care. And then things that we're doing just because we are your neighborhood, we're your neighbor, we're your Connecticut health plan. We've made nearly 10,000 outbound calls to those customers of ours who might be at a higher risk with COVID-19. And we're answering questions from the very routine around things like a bill question, or how to get a 90-day supply of their maintenance drugs, all the way on to what social services are available to them during this crisis, if in fact they are having food security issues or issues like that. So, I think there's a broad range here. We've unfortunately had to close our ConnectiCare centers across the state to in-person traffic. It's unfortunate because those are such a great resource normally. And, for our own employees, we've taken social distancing extremely seriously. And frankly, other than literally three or four people, no one is working in any ConnectiCare facilities where we are 99.2% work from home. And I will tell you, a week and a half before the governor's declaration of a state of emergency, we were only at about 75%. So talk about our IT team, the other partners that we have coming together. It has been pretty amazing to see. So that's a sampling. We have information out on our website that I really encourage people to just go and flip through, just scan through. And if certainly there are questions, our call centers are there for our customers and non-customers alike.
And can you just, what is the website that people should visit for that, Eric?
Thanks, Brian. It's www.kineticcare.com, and you'll see the all the links to the latest COVID-related information for, again, customers and non-customers alike.
So that's a great resource. And Eric, I'll also be remiss if I didn't thank you, your leadership, and just Kineticcare in general for not only during these tough times here, but all every day of the year with the Alliance. We appreciate, obviously, your partnership. And let me ask you this question, because you mentioned the website, and you mentioned resources, and I mentioned our preparedhartford.com website as well, but there's so much information out there, and sometimes it's tough to decide which is accurate and which is not, and it's a challenge for people, and I think people sometimes will start to panic when they don't have the most updated information. How are you kind of handling that response with customers? Because there's so many moving parts and things are constantly changing. How are you making sure that your customers are educated in that, not only do you have the resources, but that your customers are aware of the resources available to them?
No, absolutely, and a great question. You know, one of the things that we're doing is we're really leveraging social media, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, and of course, Facebook. That's where the more real-time updates on some key items are being disseminated. Obviously, we're keeping our website up to date. But then we're also communicating through any of the other medium that we have to use. If we have your email address, we are using it. We are letting you know what is what's the latest, what's available to you. If we don't have your email address, I really encourage people to call in and just give it to us. And, even if it's something that you just glance at, really important, especially now when we're all trying to do things in as efficient manner possible, but also in a distant manner. I'd also encourage that if people feel like they just don't have the latest information, just call us. We're there. Our customer service team, our clinicians, we're all right here in Connecticut. We have the latest information at our fingertips. And if we don't, then it's just breaking on the news and it gets into those people's hands rapidly. So, we're here for you. Don't hesitate to use us as a resource.
Well, we're going to start to wrap up here, Eric, but I do have to ask you, I have to give credit to your incredible marketing team, Kim Kahn, because as I'm talking to you here, I'm receiving a press release on the Peace of Mind initiative, which were not in the speaking points that were provided to me. Because this is like breaking news here, tell us a little about this Peace of Mind initiative, which is supporting your members during this pandemic. I'll give you a chance to talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely, no. Appreciate that. I mentioned it at a very high level. And by the way, Brian, you're absolutely right. Our team is second to none. Kim at the top of that list. And it's programs like this that come from people like Kim, like our clinical leaders, our customer service leaders, that they think about. What would they want to do for their friend, their family member, their neighbor? And that's where the Peace of Mind initiative came from. In working with our parent company down in New York City, in the absolute epicenter of this crisis in the U.S., we have partnered together on How do we reach out and touch members just to make sure that they're okay, make sure that they know that we're here for them, and to the extent that there are needs that they have, by all means, we try to provide either that direct support or link them to that support. So that's what Peace of Mind is all about. As I mentioned, we've made nearly 10,000 calls as of the beginning of the week. Hundreds of calls are made each and every day. And we're going to continue to do this. One of the key things that's happening, as we talk to our customers, is some of them are just lonely, and they do need, with all of this isolation, they just need some interaction. We're happy to check in on our customers, even if it is something as fundamental as that. So thank you for that call out, Brian. Yeah, the Peace of Mind initiative is something that we're very happy with and will continue to do.
Well, I have a ton more questions, but we have run out of time, Eric. You are, as always, a fantastic resource. I appreciate it. Again, I hope that you, your family, your work, all of your employee base, everyone stays healthy. And I have a strange feeling that we may have you on again soon to talk about whatever may happen in the next day or so here, because everything is constantly changing. But again, we appreciate your leadership, your partnership with the Alliance, and we will definitely keep in touch with everything going on with you.
Sounds great, Brian. Thanks for having me on today.
So one of the things that we're very fortunate about here in the state of Connecticut and in the Hartford area is that we have tremendous healthcare professionals, and we have a lot of innovation taking place here as well. And we're very fortunate to have with us today Charles Lee, who is a director over at the Jackson Labs, who has been always a tremendous partner with our Connecticut Health Council and the Alliance. And Charles, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I'm sure you're right in the middle of everything that's been happening during this pandemic, so I really do appreciate your leadership and taking the time to be with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with kind of the impacts here, and kind of what the Jackson Labs for genomic medicine, kind of what your efforts are here in Connecticut, and what's your, from the medical side of things and the research side of things, what's been your response to the COVID-19 crisis?
Sure. Yeah. So for those that don't know, the Jackson Laboratory for Genomic Medicine was established here in Connecticut in 2013. We've moved into our current facility in 2014, and we're part of a nonprofit biomedical research institute that has been doing research in genetics to improve human health for more than 90 years, We're situated right here on the campus of UConn Health, and consisting of about 487 people working scientifically, including 27 faculty members, to doing research on various aspects of genomic medicine. When this pandemic struck, I actually had made an appointment to see the governor. That was actually on March the 10th, and indicated that as part of our research institute, we actually have a clinical diagnostic laboratory on our second floor, which up to that point was exclusively doing cancer genomic profiling for patients. But we had the instrumentation and the know-how to bring up COVID-19 testing. And it seemed like this was something that was in high demand, not just in Connecticut, but throughout the country. And immediately the governor and the health commissioner, Josh Grobel, said that, yes, this is something that would be really helpful to have. So we started putting everything together that we needed to do the testing, and launched the COVID-19 testing here on March the 23rd, and started with a capacity of about 100 patients samples per day, and currently we're running at about 350 patient samples per day. The nice thing about it is we're joining the fight with other centers that are providing the testing, but the advantage that we're hoping to provide is that we're given a very fast turnaround on the sample results being local. So all of our test results are essentially getting back to the patients and their physicians within 24 hours. More than 80% of the results are actually returned within 12 hours. So that's a big difference from the tests that are being sent out of the state to large commercial entities and taking anywhere from 5 to 10 days to get back the results.
As far as the challenges of the testing, and we keep, we've heard in the news a lot that the testing is hard to come by sometimes, as far as the limitations of finding testing and whatnot. But what have been some of the challenges that you faced? I guess there are probably challenges and opportunities at this point, but getting your testing program up and running in this current environment, how has that been a challenge to you?
Yeah, so, well, the state has been excellent in making sure that all the regulatory components of getting the testing up and going was dealt with immediately. So, we were able to get legitimately this test up and running in a process that would normally take 2 to 3 months. We were able to get it up and running in 2 weeks. So that's an incredible effort, which wouldn't have happened without full support from the state. The second is, as you mentioned, it is a challenge to continue to get supplies for the actual kits, the tests themselves. We partnered up with Thermo Fisher very early on, and they've been just fantastic in making sure that we're prioritized in getting kits when necessary, and so we've been happy with that. I think one of the biggest challenges actually has been in just organizing the lab in such a way that if someone were in the clinical lab were to come down with COVID-19 infection, not from handling the samples, but just from their interactions outside of the lab, if anyone were to get sick, we don't want to get into a situation where we have to quarantine everybody in the CLIA lab and shut down the lab. And so being careful to have very stringent shifts, 2x2 shifts, and complete separation of those individuals, no overlap when they're in the building, that's not something we do routinely, but we've had to implement, and it seems to be working successfully. And I think the other thing is trying to ramp up the testing capabilities as quickly as possible so that we can meet the demands of more and more individuals. So right now, our priorities are really to provide quick turnaround time on the test results for inpatients in the hospitals, as well as symptomatic healthcare workers. And as we ramp up our testing capabilities, then we'll be able to provide it to more individuals. But I really feel very strongly that throughout the country, we need to be testing more individuals, including those that have very mild and in some cases no symptoms. The data that's coming out from several sources in other countries are that as much as 30% of people that are actually infected with COVID-19 and capable of spreading it actually have little or no symptoms. And so, that's we need to identify those individuals as well to help suppress this pandemic.
Well, Charles, there's a lot more I'd love to ask you. Unfortunately, we are out of time here, but I'd love to have you back on again as we progress here, because I know what's happening today may be different tomorrow and next week. So we appreciate the partnership and the leadership of Jackson Labs. Appreciate your insight and information, and I hope you, your coworkers, your family, and all your friends are all healthy and safe, especially in the environment that we're in today.
Likewise for all of you. Please stay safe and healthy.
Thanks for being with us on Pulse of the Region.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Our final guest today, as we switch things up a little bit, is Jay Williams, who's president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. As we've talked about on the show many times during these days, the nonprofit community and partnerships and collaboration with the corporate community is especially important to sustain us as we go through these very tough and challenging times, but we're fortunate enough to have leaders like Jay Williams in this community. And Jay, thanks so much for being with us. I hope you're feeling well, your staff's feeling well, and and your family and friends as well.
Brian, thank you for having me. And I can say that, we have truly been blessed, my family as well. We have no reported illnesses of any of the staff of the Hartford Foundation, and I hope the same holds true for you and your family, for your team, and for everyone who is listening. So we certainly appreciate being able to take some time with you today.
Appreciate that, Jay. And I want to jump into it because I know you guys are doing so much these days. You've helped so many people, not just these days, but throughout the year, even when we're under quote-unquote normal circumstances. But you have something called the COVID-19 Response Fund. And I want you just, for anybody that might not be aware of what that is, if you could just kind of tell our listeners what is that and kind of how that's the role that that's kind of playing in this community and helping us through these tough times.
Sure. Well, let me start off by saying we only exist because of the generosity and the philanthropy of our donors who span and cross the entirety of the region that we serve. So in good times and bad, we are here to serve the community. And in these most difficult, excruciatingly difficult times, we have created a COVID-19 response fund. Well, we activated our disaster response fund. We created this fund, this mechanism, a couple of years ago in the wake of the hurricanes that devastated Puerto Rico, Texas, and Florida. So we were able to activate it very quickly with $1 million from the foundation. And in the 3 weeks that it has been active, we have also received over $1 million in additional contributions from donors, from the corporate community, from individual donors, from just a variety of people who are concerned about the well-being of others. The idea is for us to be able to rapidly deploy these resources to our nonprofit partners across the region, those who are serving residents who are most vulnerable parts of our population from health and the economic impacts and the related impacts of this. So whether it's the basic human needs, which are first and foremost, food, shelter, access to medical care, things like that, to the organizations who are helping to connect and support the first line responders. So it is really an effort to ensure that those segments of the population that even in the best of times were already on the margins certainly are going to be disproportionately impacted. So again, it is a work in progress, and I can't credit our staff enough. I can't credit them enough for the great work they've done as they've been able to pivot and to move very quickly into getting these resources out into the community.
Now, the foundation does this kind of work, as I said. It's not just when there's a crisis. You're doing this work all year. But how, and we had a conversation last week with the United Way and kind of talked about this a little bit as well, but how has the current situation kind of changed the way you operate? Has it evolved your role in the community at all? What's changed for you today versus 5 weeks ago when we were living in a quote-unquote, normal world?
That's a great question, Brian. So we had already embarked upon an evolution of the foundation to be more nimble, to be more responsive, to streamline and modernize our grant making process and our engagement with the community. And we had established some milestones, some of which we had achieved. Other milestones that we had established were mid-year 2020, late 2020, and early 2021. So we were excited about going into the middle and the end of this year with a new plan, a new approach. What this pandemic has done, Brian, it has accelerated all of those plans and brought them to warp speed. So the analysis, the groundwork that we were laying, we had to say, you know what? We need to pull the trigger now, modernize, streamline our approaches, which again was already a work in progress, and we had achieved some of those goals, but we were forced to do that in a matter of probably 10 to 15 days, what we'd been planning to do over the course of several months. And there are some benefits to that. We have seen a new level of energy and creativity and innovation, collaboration. Although we are separated physically, we have in many instances work together more closely, more collaboratively, because we perhaps took for granted the ability to walk into an office or just to convene around the coffee machine and chit-chat, or we sometimes rolled our eyes at another meeting that we were going to have at the Hartford Foundation to talk about this progress. And with the precious nature of time and efficiency and speed, knowing that there's an acute crisis, it has caused us to be, frankly, at our best in a way that is, I think, going to resonate and remain with us even after this crisis. So some of the things that we are implementing now, we will not go back to some of the previous ways, because we have determined and discovered that the best laid plans, when you put them into action, that's when you really test their validity and their efficacy, and we're finding a lot of that. There'll certainly be things that we tweak and learn from when we're not in crisis mode, but this has been a real life put it to the test experience for us.
Well, you talk about after the crisis, and you know, no one knows for sure, you know, with any certainty when that will be. But I was having a conversation with someone the other day about, you know, some of the societal issues that may spawn from this crisis. You know, maybe people that are, you know, there's more drinking, so alcoholism, mental health issues. You know, people who are depressed. There seems to be the potential for a lot of help that might be needed after this whole thing. How will that kind of change your model, if at all? I mean, do you foresee there being more issues? Will it be the same? Will it be business as usual in 6 months for you, or will some of these items be worse afterwards?
I do not think it will be business as usual, and that's so we are keeping our eye on the acute crisis in front of us, but we are also recognizing that there's going to be an intermediate and then a long-term impact from this. I don't know that business will ever be the same, you know, across the planet in many respects. So to that end, preparing for an onslaught or an increase of necessary mental health, social emotional health services. Unfortunately, there are going to be both nonprofit and for-profit organizations that perhaps do not emerge from this crisis. So those areas where they were serving so admirably for so many years will have to be taken up by other organizations. Yes, there will likely be new organizations, perhaps are grown out of this crisis. But yeah, we cannot imagine going back to business as usual. And then that's not to speak of the economic impact, which certainly is directly related to the ability of nonprofits, because when the economy is well and people are philanthropic and feel that they can take care of their own basic needs, they are then inclined to give to others. And I say that, and I should be, let me qualify that, because even in the midst of this crisis, we have not seen people turn inward. We have seen our donors actually say, you know what, we're good. We'll be okay. We want to give what we can to others. So I think that there will be some fundamental changes in how we view our work, how we attempt to prepare for the next crisis, because there will be some other crisis. You know, we pray that it will never be another crisis like this in our lifetime, but it will be something. So, you know, lessons learned and business as usual, I don't think is a phrase or a mantra that we will fall back into. There will be a routine, you know, and we will not always be operating on, you know, on a pace that we are operating now. You can't operate in overdrive, you know, perpetually. So, but you're right. I think the fundamental changes that we will have to be prepared for the long term are something that we very much take into account.
Jay, we have about a minute left, but I want to ask you one final question, because I want to end this on a positive note. There's obviously a lot of doom and gloom out there, and we see the death tolls rising and the number of cases rising of the virus and whatnot. But what have you seen as far as success goes? I know that you've helped a lot of people already. You talked about the philanthropic effort within this community. What's something positive? Tell me a little bit about what you've experienced on the front lines as far as the community's response.
The nonprofit organizations that are the first line responders, the front line responders, whether they be healthcare or food distribution or caring for our young people or our elderly or those who have developmental, mental, emotional, or physical challenges, to see them put their clients' needs first has just been so inspiring. To see them do with, you know, whatever resources, the level of creativity, you know, that has renewed our spirit. And the staff and I have had an opportunity to just hear and read some of the responses from these organizations, and it has inspired us. I can tell you personally, I am inspired by, again, the staff response, the staff who we are working remotely, but who I know for sure are working late into the night, early in the morning, who are not distinguishing weekends from work days, all coming together to do things that are, you know, allow us to get the resources. So it's been inspiring, just the human stories behind this, Brian.
Well, thanks for your leadership, Jay. Thanks for your partnership with the Alliance. If you want to throw out your website for people as a resource as well,
Sure. HFPG.org. HFPG, the first letters of our name, Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. HFPG.org has a wealth of information with respect to the resources that we are putting out into the community and the partnerships that we are engaged in.
Well, you're always a wealth of information as well, Jay. So really, thanks for taking the time. I know you're crazy busy, but be well. Again, family, friends, staff, hope all you guys stay well. And again, to our, all of our listeners, please, everyone, you know, heed everything that you're hearing, you know, with what you're hearing. Stay in social distance and be well. That's the most important thing, the health. And we'll all get through this together. I want to thank Jay Williams, Eric Galvin, and Charles Lee for being with us today to talk about healthcare and the nonprofit sectors as well. And again, visit metroharford.com and preparedharford.com for more information. I want to thank Oak Hill, and I want to thank you for listening to Pulse of the Region, brought to you by the Metro Hartford Alliance.